Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Car Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hello and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Benjamin.
And I'm another one of your hosts, Kurt Guerin.
And I am the third host of, or the third half of Car Stuff. My name is Ben Bolin. And I've got to say, today's episode is a pretty fascinating idea for anyone who doesn't know, Kurt. You would consider yourself a cyclist, right?
Yeah, I would. A non-motorized cyclist.
Okay, and there's a popular cycling culture in our city, the fair metropolis of Atlanta, you know?
Hey, wait, super quick, I got to interrupt.
Yeah.
You said you're the third half?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking in, just making sure.
Dude, I'm not like a fraction surgeon.
I didn't mean to bust your chops.
No, I know.
Listen, it's fun. It's all in fun, Ben.
Thanks for letting me slip that joke in, though. I thought I could get away with it if it wasn't for you darn kids.
Hey, listen, if I'm not here to interrupt things, I don't know what I'm here for. But seriously, you were saying that there is a bicycle culture here in Atlanta, and I see it all the time, of course. There's both motorized and non-motorized, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think there's, listeners, you'll find there's a reason that our pal Kurt is making that distinction between motorized and non-motorized vehicles. Now, the three of us live in different neighborhoods. I live probably the closest to work out of the three of us. And on the strip of the main road, Ponce de Leon here, you can sometimes see on the weekends groups of people, typically on motorcycles. You might see some three-wheeled vehicles as well. Just sort of hot rodding, you know what I mean? Just making the scene, stopping at the local chicken wing place, or one of them. We have like three chicken wing places on this strip because it's Atlanta.
Chicken strips,
yes, exactly. And generally, in this neighborhood, those groups are going to be about maybe at the most 15 or 18 bikes.
Still a pretty big group.
That's at the maximum size. You know what I mean? That's like Saturday on a holiday weekend.
Yeah.
But I've always wondered how these groups get together, how they form, and what they're doing. A couple of times, the guys who have the best music just post up in a parking lot. They drive, they post up in the parking lot, and they drive somewhere else to a different parking lot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. For me, it seems all in good fun, but I'm not the only person who's had this kind of experience.
Yeah, back in September, I was on my way to the airport. This is on Interstate 285 here in Atlanta. It was on a Sunday, so not a heavy traffic day. I was headed southbound towards the I-20 intersection, and traffic was going at a strange pace. So as I made my way through the cluster of cars, I noticed that there were several ATVs in the right two lanes. They were followed by a police officer without lights on, just kind of, they were flowing with traffic, actually maybe a little slower than traffic was moving. They had taken the exit. And there was the rest of the group was coming back onto the interstate from the exit. So I would say there were maybe 60 to 80 bikers.
Significantly larger.
Yeah. Wow.
And they were on all different flavors of ATV, three-wheelers, four-wheelers, dirt bikes, some street motorcycles.
Ah, okay. You're getting to the crux of this whole thing now. These are the off-road vehicles, right? The unlicensed vehicles that are on the street. And we're talking interstate.
And I would argue that's a whole different beast. You know, that's not the same thing as a group of street legal bikes. And I've actually seen something very similar. This will be a little bit of inside baseball for people who are not familiar with Atlanta, but you two will know what I'm talking about. You guys know North Avenue crosses over the interstate.
Yes.
So when I was in college, there was a gas station that would be a stopping point for an ATV bike gang, an off-road bike gang. And I thought they were cool because it always looked like I was maybe walking into a music video, and I had this idea that I was a cameo of the guy in the back who, like, comes in and gets a Coke and just, like, walks out while they're doing the group scene. But this group reminded me of the Rough Riders from DMX videos, you know? He had a lot of music videos where there would be people riding these off-road bikes, these ATVs and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys know me. I never want to mess up someone else's good time. But is that legal?
Not legal. Not legal on city streets, not legal on residential streets, not illegal anywhere. These are off-road vehicles. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, I believe, get a bike that looks like an off-road bike licensed.
Yeah.
Even, you know, it has to pass the certification. It has to have exact, you know, what it needs, the lights facing forward and backward, you know, the turn indicators, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Make sure that, you know, it checks out mechanically, all that. And you can get a license, but they're not licensed. These are licensed for off-road use. They are probably not even that. They're just simply ATVs and bikes that are, you know, they come into the hands of certain individuals that, you know, park them in a garage and kind of hide them away, bring them out when there's going to be a, I think what they call them, a ride out or, well, we'll talk about all the different types of these in just a moment. But I think maybe it's best if we can just kind of describe what you feel when you see one of these, because I have got so many mixed emotions about this whole thing. And if you listen to this whole podcast, you're going to find that I'm not trying to contradict myself, but I'll say this. And I was talking with Kurt off air about this earlier. Kurt and I were saying, you know, it's like there's this one part of it that's really cool, but then there's this other side. And then there's this other side that looks really dangerous, but then there's also this. And here, I don't understand why they do it, but I do get this. And like, it's just this back and forth in my own head, and I can't seem to sort it all out. I know that it's not legal. It looks like a hell of a lot of fun. It really does. When I watch one of these, I think, I guess the first thing is like, oh man, that looks like a great time. Looks like it would be a blast to do what these guys do. And if any listener is wanting to just get a quick glimpse of this while we're talking, or if they don't understand what we're talking about, you can search bike life, like all one word. You know, you can put any big city name in front of that. ATL bike life. You can put Baltimore bike life, New Orleans bike life, whatever you want. You'll find examples of these videos of these rideouts that they do, these ATV and dirt bike rideouts in these large cities. Just about any large city has it now. But when I watch them, I really do think like, oh man, that's got to be so much fun. But I would be worried about getting arrested. And then it looks like who wouldn't want to do something like this? These stunt riders are amazing, but they're not wearing any safety equipment at all. I mean, nothing. They're not wearing helmets. They're not wearing, you know, the jackets, the leathers, or anything like that. Some of them will wear helmets or goggles, and a lot of times I feel like that's just to disguise who they are. Because almost invariably in one of these videos, every one of these videos, the police show up. And they have their lights on. They, you know, give them a couple of warning sirens or whatever. But like Kurt said, sometimes they are following them. They're not intending to pull them over, really. It's almost like they're just watching them to make sure that nothing happens to them, you know, that they don't anger the public that's on the road. And you know, something dire happens there, a confrontation between them.
Get on the wrong side of someone in a truck or an SUV.
God, and of course, when the police do show up, here's another one of these, like, this is great, but you know, okay, so the police show up and they really have a hard time dealing with these guys. And we can talk about that later more in detail because there's a lot of problems with how to handle these situations. You know, there's a lot of people on the roads illegally and doing illegal things. There's a lot of just like complete disrespect for the police in this, in that they'll taunt the police. They'll ride by them with, you know, the middle finger in the air, shouting things. If the police get out of the car to kind of chase one of them down or something, they'll jump on top of the car and smash, you know, windows and that kind of thing. It's
that
happened.
Doesn't happen all
doesn't
the time.
Doesn't happen
though,
every
right?
time, but it has happened. And yeah. that's the stuff that goes viral that most of America sees.
I see.
If you're not in the city, you don't see it all the time with every ride, of course.
I mean, it only I know takes one bad apple
exactly,
to spoil the bunch.
Exactly.
I think that's why the police kind of hang back and don't pursue, because yeah. they know there's going to be this one person that's going to want to chase.
Well, also. Everything's videotaped right now. I mean, sure. or recorded. I keep saying videotaped. Like
they've got, they've got the reels on their chest.
The giant VHS camera on their shoulder like a bazooka, you know, that kind of thing. No, everything is recorded now, it seems. Like everybody's got a GoPro that does this, of course, and then people are holding up their phones. And we've seen a lot of examples of police trying to arrest the individuals that are doing this. You know, it is illegal. To do this, so that they're within their rights to stop them and at least warn them or tell them or whatever. But the taunting then gets them angry. They get angry at the riders. They try to stop the riders. Now they're in there's so many things. They're in like a 5,000-pound car. First of all, the police, trying to catch somebody who's on a 200-pound bike that can go, you know, in between cars, in between houses, off road, any terrain really. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the beauty of the bike that they're using to get away or to do this. It's a no-win situation for the police in this situation.
I don't believe the police chase after motorcycles in general. I think they'll just rely on other means to catch them later, for the general public safety. I think that's just like a rule of thumb.
You mean just maybe identify them, let them go for now, locate them later.
I think so.
You'll get that letter or you'll get that surprise visit to the office.
Yeah, but it is fun to watch the police chase videos where they try to catch motorcycles. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, just watch the in-car camera stuff and, you know, hear the radio chatter and, you know, trying to radio far enough ahead to get them. And it's all exciting to me. I like this. But you can see where I'm super conflicted about all this, right? Because it's so much fun. It's got to be.
It's got to be
so much fun.
Yeah.
There's some solutions that people have posed, but maybe they're not very realistic.
Yeah. And the notion of a biker gang is kind of steeped into American culture in general and car culture, and just kind of like this thing about it.
It's a bit of an outlaw thing, you know. Of course it is. It's an outlaw sport or activity or group or whatever.
Yeah, but these guys aren't one percenters, you know what I mean? They're not running. They're not like the outlaw bikers of old. They're not running drugs, or they're not human traffickers or whatever.
No, these guys are just out to have a good time.
And also,
they really are.
Also, a lot of times it's like a family thing. Like you get together with your siblings, maybe your dad or your kids, and then you guys take your bikes out.
Sure. Yeah. I can see that. So I've said a lot of crap about this already, and I've got more to say even. Uh-huh. But what do you guys think about this? When you first watch them, what's your gut impression of what you're seeing on the screen in front of you, or in person if you've seen it in person?
So in person, I don't know about you, Kurt, but in person, the first time I saw it again was in college here in Atlanta. I, at the time, did not know that ATVs or dirt bikes were illegal. This sounds so stupid saying it, but you can understand my logic, because to me, all-terrain vehicle included, you know, like interstates. That was a terrain. So I thought, okay, they just do all of that, you know?
Sure.
So I didn't see the problem. I thought maybe there was a festival or something in town, because that was my guess. I was like, okay, maybe there's a car show in town or a bike show or something.
A parade or something.
Right. Because I thought, it can't be that fun, you know. Maybe they're doing it for a cause, for like cancer or, you know. Mm-hmm. And then as I kept watching the guys, I was like, well, if they're doing it for a cause, it's not seatbelts and it's not helmets. That's for sure. This is something else.
Maybe it's for tattoo removal.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's it. So I kid. Right. Yeah, I would see these guys during summer, usually, because I would walk to the nearby gas station from the dorm. So my initial reaction was one of like bemused interest. But I wasn't inspired to get my old four-wheeler from back home and roll up with them. It was pretty clear. I was like, these people are all already doing a thing. They may not want outsiders rolling up.
Even in the bicycle culture, there's critical mass type rides. So gigantic groups of riders who will take over the street for that purpose, to slow down traffic, to raise awareness, like, hey, we're here, don't run over us. But when I ride, I mostly try to stay out of the way. I'll ride on the road, but I'll stay over to the side. I'm not trying to slow people down too much.
Can I ask you a quick question about the critical mass thing?
Of course.
All right. I have a feeling we differ greatly on our opinion about the critical mass bike rides. I really do. And the reason is that I feel that if a bike group that is blocking major roadways in a city to raise awareness of bikes on the road and that, hey, we're here, we know you're there, angering the people behind the wheel is probably not the best way to say, give us some space on the road when you see us in the future.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It just makes people angry, really, when you've now ruined their weekend plans because, you know, it takes 2 hours to get through the city instead of, you know, 15 minutes or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I understand the importance of making your voice heard and, you know, the cause and, like, you know, getting people aware of things. But it seems like this is one where you're doing the exact thing that you don't want to happen in order to raise that awareness. You know, you're making everybody just frustrated as hell that the bikes are on the road kind of wrecking the traffic flow for that weekend. And the bikes are saying, hey, we're on the road. We don't want to wreck the traffic flow. We're not trying to wreck the traffic flow. We're just want to ride our bike, but you're doing the opposite. So I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for that.
Okay.
I do understand the importance of making that message known. I'm sympathetic in that way, but I think it's just maybe the wrong way to go about it.
Like the tactic. You disagree with the tactic.
Yeah, exactly. You're
saying that the optics or the PR is wrong-headed. You're saying they're shooting themselves in the foot a little.
I feel like they are a little bit because it just makes other motorists angry in that situation. And I just think there's a better way to do it, maybe.
Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites!
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way!
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear!
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool!
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Cowan-Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcast. You find it.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Poppy.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after 3-0
Winner, winner, chicken dinner, homie.
The Immaculate Reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball. But he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the critical mass thing, I would say, is a little different just because of the technology involved. You know what I mean? There's no way that a non-motorized bike, even a bike with like an electronic assist, is going to get to the speed of a dirt bike.
Mm-hmm.
That may not be true. There's a pretty strong electronic assist now.
Yeah,
that I think about. A non-motorized bike, just, you know, leg power alone is not going to match an ATV or a dirt bike, and it feels like the cyclist approached this a little bit differently because, you know, people on ATVs, people on dirt bikes are often going to be searching for a thrill. We're going to be chasing some adrenaline, right? And a lot of people who bike with a non-motorized bike, on the other hand, are often going to have some concerns about, you know, maybe their health. They want to stay in shape. Maybe they want to be a little kinder to the environment or something like that. So I'm not saying they're diametrically opposed, but they are, I would say, distinct groups, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And the other thing is, I think the critical mass people get a license or something, don't they? Don't they, like, it's like a protest.
Some do, some don't. You probably have to get a parade permit,
yeah,
or something like
I would
that.
Imagine.
I would bet it's a mix.
I think some do, some don't.
A lot of them are just some people on Facebook who are saying, what are you doing Saturday kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, even the ATV rides, they're so huge. The one that I saw was giant. The organization impressed me.
right, the fact
that they could just get a bunch of people together and do this thing, whatever it is sort of impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You say that, you know, there were 60 or 80 in that group that you saw. There have been groups that are several hundred, and if not close to 1,000 people. And when they pass you, when they're passing you on the road or, you know, in the intersection you're at or wherever, it can take a long time for that group to pass because they're not going like, they're not blazing speed by, you know, they're doing tricks and they're looping back around and doing more tricks. And, you know, it's about stunt riding. A lot of it is and just kind of showing off a bit.
I like the circus nature of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I kind of do too. I mean, it's interesting. It is like a parade in that way, you know, like, you know, when you see the Shriners go by and their little tiny motorcycles and their cars and they do circles and tricks and, some routines. And I feel like some of these guys have some of that skill. They definitely are skilled. I mean, you'll see a lot of really skilled riders doing this.
I've seen some people eat the curb.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not at high speeds, but you know.
Yeah.
I've had that little Nelson haha moment when I saw a guy screw up a wheelie, and I thought, you deserve it.
Hi, man. I saw a video. Maybe we're branching into another section of this right now, and we can go back and forth if you want.
Sure,
but,
sure.
There are BMX riders that will do the same thing, that will amass smaller groups of BMX riders, not hundreds like, you know, we see in these big ATV groups and dirt bike groups, but smaller groups. But they're very skilled with their tricks, and you know, but they're doing things like jumping off the bonnets of cars, and you know, doing ollies over other bikes in the middle of the road, and they're like using the side of a semi like a wall to do tricks off of and that type of thing. And it's a little destructive in that, you know, they're harming other people's property as they're doing it. And there's some terrifying videos online of what these guys do. And they're professional. I mean, they claimed, and I say professional, there's no like league or anything, but this is what they do. They go out on the street and they do this. This is their leisure activity or whatever, sport. They will ride right into oncoming traffic. I mean, right dead at you in traffic, and then the very last second, swerve out of the way.
That's stupid.
And slide the wheel and try to get as close to the bumper as you can. But I've seen, like, one of the guys that, you know, claims to be, like, the, you know, the king of, I don't know, New Jersey or wherever, right?
Oh,
They
kind of
name themselves, you know.
His Highness. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But,
down the shore, right?
He's doing this against like a minivan that's coming the opposite direction on a bridge, I believe. Slides his rear wheel in front of it and clips the bumper with his rear wheel. He wipes out. The car stops thinking like, oh my God, I've just hit somebody. And he just gets on his bike, brushes himself off and rides away and is kind of laughing and waving. but, you know, he's probably scuffed up the bumper of that person. And what's the, I mean, there's a potential for some significant damage there.
Two things.
Yeah.
First, I want to be clear, lest I sound like a cruel person, that the guy I saw mess up the wheelie was probably fine. His most serious fracture was going to be to his pride because there were other people watching him.
Yeah.
And I wasn't the only one laughing. And number two, what kind of minivan was it?
I was a, you know what? I think it was just a Dodge. It was not, okay. An Odyssey.
Okay. No, no, I had to check. Okay.
Yeah,
I hope they're all right then.
I'm pretty sure it was not a Honda Odyssey.
I hope they're all right. Yeah. I see what you're saying though, because when we think about driving on the interstate, even when everybody's obeying the laws of traffic, the rules of the road, one little bit of human error can create a disaster very quickly. And when you're in, I think anybody who's driven a fair amount has had that experience where you're driving, you're in a car, truck, what have you, and then you get kind of enveloped by the swarm of bikes.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, sure.
And I'm okay. I'm okay with those folks passing through, as long as they're not driving too crazy. I'm all about predictability on the road from other drivers and from myself. But I've seen things where people are, you know, taking crazy swerves or they're trying to race each other. The interstate that encircles a lot of our city, 285, is infamous for these kinds of crazy maneuvers.
Sure. Lane splitting and things like that.
Right,
but you're
right.
Talking about sport bikes in many cases, right?
Yeah.
But I think that these ATV rides are just loaded with people that are taking chances and that are kind of racing each other at times, not the full time, but there are some high-speed passes that, you know, they're standing on the back bumper, you know, one wheel in the air, one wheel on the ground, and they're kind of swerving in between people, and, like, they've got amazing control, you know, while they're in... I guess as much control as you can have with one wheel on the ground.
Right,
and standing on the bike, right? But there are also, at times, you know, there are some high-speed, you know, little kind of contests between individuals in the group, but it's usually short-lived. And the people, actually everybody in the group knows to watch for people coming up from behind because that's what's happening all the time.
So the authorities are taking action on that. In cities like D.C., mm-hmm. Cleveland, Baltimore, Atlanta, it's just like you were saying earlier, Kurt, maybe their policy is not to chase somebody down while they're on the road, but they'll click on, they'll get the license, right? And then they'll follow up. In D.C., 2018, I think, their metro department ended up publishing this video that had to break some people's hearts. 62 all-terrain vehicles and dirt bikes were being crushed by the police at a scrapyard outside of the city.
Confiscated, huh?
Yeah, yep, confiscated. And currently, or at the time in D.C., what would happen is when they followed up on your license and came back, you would get a $250 fine, possibly a 30-day jail sentence.
Okay, I'm gonna have to ask you this question.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a license. So do you think that they're doing the license or just a description and then it's word of mouth who's who, or they've actually nabbed these guys at home?
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah, I wonder. Because
how are they finding them?
You can't trace them back to anybody because
they're
not
street legal.
Yeah, these are not street legal. So I think they're getting actual clear photographs of them.
Okay.
Then, of course, through video and stills.
Yeah.
And then being able to trace it back to individuals that, let's say, they may have had contact with these individuals in the past, you know. Previous record, whatever it happens to be, you know, I recognize that neck tattoo on that guy, or I recognize, distinctive about them.
We all call them snake bite.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's ways to track down people, even, you know, if you don't have a license plate.
That's a really good point.
And I think that's probably what's happening. And if they did have plates, they'd probably have a whole lot more to crush, I would think.
Well, yeah. In D.C., what they were doing, at least, was also offering $250 to people who provided info to the police that would help them track down users. So you've got to be right. That's a very good correction there. People are proposing different ideas. In a story out of WAMU 88.5 in D.C., a guy named Eric Butler Jr. proposed that instead of destroying ATVs and dirt bikes and arresting and fining the users, the city should just allow them to be registered and legally used on city streets.
Oh, boy.
That's where I wanted to hear from you guys on, because now he he wanted to have this ballot initiative called the DC Bike Life Access and Use of Non-Traditional Vehicles Act of 2018. So you'd be able to register the vehicle and you have limited use in the district and on highways. On the highways specifically, you'd be able to ride on the shoulder in DC. As long as you're not going over 45 on the streets, then you don't need a motorcycle endorsement on your license. So I get that they're trying to bake in some safety there.
Sure.
But again,
that takes away half of the fun.
Right. That's
you know
thing.
What I mean? It's like you're getting away with something, I think, and that's part of it, right? I mean, that's part of the thrill, I think, of what they're doing. Kurt, what do you think about registering them and making them legal and allowing them to do what they're doing?
I'm a little bit torn about this because the groups that we're talking about generally ride in the city. Mm-hmm. What they're trying to do is they're trying to say, we like to ride dirt bikes. We like to ride ATVs, but we don't have a place to do it where we live. You can go out to the countryside and see people doing wheelies and jumping over dirt berms and riding down power line trails and things of that nature. But in the city, if you'd like to ride your ATV, what do? There's got to be some sort of a happy medium. I believe here in Atlanta, they've been trying to, or they were, I don't know if it's still going on, but they were trying to build a park or some sort of a space where they could, where dirt bike riders could ride their dirt bikes in town.
Okay, I have a question for you about that then. So, like, I know we keep wandering all over the place, and I feel like I have more to say about registering them. And you know what? Let me just do that right now.
Okay,
because before we pass this up and it's gone, the moment's gone. Registering them, that's fine. The problem is a lot of these are very low vehicles. They're, the four-wheelers, it's hard to see them. I've been behind individual four-wheelers, leaving the office here, right on the streets, right outside of our office. Just on, any random Tuesday afternoon, going home from work. And they don't have a flag on the back or anything like that. There's no way to, see them if they're coming over a hill toward you. There's a lot of hills down here. City is it's rolling city. It's not flat like a lot of cities are. So you have a difficult time seeing oncoming traffic sometimes at intersections.
Yeah.
If you don't have an awareness that a four-wheeler is coming over the road, anybody else can imagine like a go-kart or something like that. It might be a little bit higher than that, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to see somebody on a lower vehicle like that and small, relatively small. It's going to add a lot of complexity to things where they're going to have headlights and taillights and turn signals and, whatever other safety features are needed. They're going to have to wear the proper equipment. The helmet law is going to have to be part of this whole thing. And that's not right now, because they're just doing this on their own. You'll see a lot of guys that don't wear helmets in these rides. And it is mostly guys. It is mostly young guys. Not a lot of women participate in this. I'm sure there are, but not a lot. I don't know. I don't feel like it's a good solution to register them. I mean, to track them, that's great. But again, I think it takes all the fun out of it for these guys.
So that's the thing, too, with having a designated space, it probably goes into registration.
It does. But conflict.
How do you feel about scooters being on the road then?
Well,
the low powered scooters.
Like the birds and.
Vespas? Vespa types or
even out of those. That's
Honda Spree. Kurt, we've had to talk about these a long time. Like it's really hard to deal with those in downtown Atlanta, especially because of the terrain that we've talked about. And a lot of cities are the same, I think, but they're even at their fastest, they're still slower than traffic, and that's really hard to accommodate for.
I get it in really dense cities. You know what I mean? Like some cities, maybe not a ton of American cities, but in some like really dense Asian cities or really old European cities where a lot of the thoroughfares just used to be alleyways because there were no such thing as cars. I think scooters work magnificently there. I am a little sour on them because my girlfriend went through a phase where she fell in love with the idea of having a scooter. I think you may remember this one, Scott. And we had to, have what corporate America calls a healthy conversation about whether you actually want a scooter or whether you love the idea of a scooter.
Sure.
Right? And I think I see where you're going there with that because we have those, but Atlanta is such a sprawling city. And the streets are so wide, and for a big part of the city, outside of suburb developments, a lot of the main roads are going to be faster than a scooter can go. Mm-hmm. Those are just the facts.
Sure. Mm. Yeah.
But does that mean, and I don't know if this is where you're going, Kurt, but does that mean then that all scooters should be relegated to some special area like a scooter preserve, and you have to register with the scooter club?
Well, I feel like it just makes a lot of sense to have low impact vehicles moving around a city.
Well,
along with cars and along with bikes and along with pedestrians on foot. I mean, even though if you're on a street, you're not necessarily looking for a dirt bike.
Yeah.
But pulling out of a parking lot,
yeah,
you should be looking for people on foot, people on bike, people on motorcycle, whatever.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean,
when you're on the road, usually cars are the things that register if you're glancing around like you should be doing all over the place. I believe that all these vehicles do or should have a place in certain areas.
In transit. They need bike lanes.
Yeah. You know, I see what you're saying that, you know, if there are motorcycles on the street, why can't there be a four-wheeler on the street? I mean, it seems like that's logical, right?
Yeah.
It should be able to happen. Maybe it's just that we've got a bad taste in our mouth because of what we see already with these four-wheelers on the streets, you know, like the way that they're being used right now.
Mm-hmm.
If they were following the traffic rules, if they were following the traffic laws and, you know, all that, and everything was fine, like, you know, with a lot of motorcycle riders and bicycle riders, of course. I don't want to offend any bike riders in the room, Kurt. But, and scooter riders, that's fine. As long as they're following the rules, that's fine. It does disrupt the flow a bit, and mm-hmm. I would think that the motorized vehicles, I should say the four-wheelers, have a little more pep to them than the scooters do usually, typically. And, you know, of course, bicycles are on the other end of that. And then we've got, you know, the little electric scooters that we deal with now and all that, mm-hmm. too. It's another whole conversation that we could have.
There's not a problem if people just park them.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcast. You find it.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball. but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So getting back to the idea that, you know, well, why doesn't the city install a place for them to ride?
Okay.
I think that there's a problem with this, and I think I mentioned this way up front in the podcast, that, you know, I've seen that as a proposed solution to this whole thing. The problem is if they're riding the way that we see them riding now, you know, it's kind of like when they're meeting up in the park and you see them going everywhere and doing stunts and, like, nearly, they're near collisions, there's... You know, it's not like there's a track and it's like, you know, it's like a BMX track or something where everybody goes in the same clockwise direction around this track and you could do your jumps and everything, but, you know, it's very monitored and very carefully watched.
It's a little more like a skate park.
Yeah, and they require helmets and they require safety gear and all that, right? And mechanical checks of everything. It's not like taking this just to the park and just letting somebody go. Like, you can't just have free reign, because I think there's going to be problems again, just like there were. And insurance, you know, there's going to be legal problems that would arise that you wouldn't consider, you know, maybe you wouldn't consider them on the surface, but it's going to happen.
I want to mention something else that could be a deal breaker with a designated space argument. That's that a lot of people who do this want to do it on the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they would be in a park or a parking lot, and sure, people probably practice a lot there, right?
Well, because look how fun this looks. It looks like a blast, doesn't it? I would have a great time doing this, but I would have the guilt. I couldn't do it knowing that it's illegal. I just can't. I personally can't do that.
I got to say, one thing that's missing from our conversation, one thing I feel like we have to point out, is that people who are members of bike life groups or who are pro bike life in some way say that this is a positive thing, that this is an opportunity. I think specifically here in Atlanta, and Kurt, I believe this is an article that you sent me, when our city was talking about the idea of having a specific place to a specific place for people to bike, advocates like Robbie Caban spoke up and said things such as this. I'm just going to read this quote to you. "We have this opportunity of young urban youth doing something positive, and the city has the opportunity to embrace this, and we're the ones dropping the ball." She says that the ATL Bike Life Group also, you know, they have book bag drives for going back to school. They have Easter egg hunts. This is a community thing, and you can see groups like ATL Bike Life made a pretty great music video called "Bikes Up, Guns Down," and so this is also like an anti-gang thing in some ways that makes it similar to an extracurricular after-school program. And when we factor in that kind of perspective, it gives me a positive view of this. It makes me feel like there's some way that cities can support it. I just don't know what that way is.
Yeah. What if it's one weekend or one day out of the month, or, you know, it's the third Saturday every month we have this ride, and it goes on these streets, and it's a pathway that's cleared of pedestrians, cleared of other cars, other vehicles, allow them to do what they do, to have fun on the city streets and ride as they want. Maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe, I mean, that's, it's not a bad solution, not a terrible solution, but again, I feel like you sanction something like this. You tell them, like, this is okay, and it takes away 50% of the fun.
Takes away the freedom.
Maybe 80% of the fun is sucked out of that event right there immediately.
Mardi Gras isn't every day, even in New Orleans.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And, you know, these events, these ride-outs or whatever you want to call it, and sometimes it might even be just, you know, we're going to meet up at this gas station and see what happens, you know, and everything does happen. I mean, they end up splitting up, you know, and the police do show up and everybody gets together and they talk about how close it was. And, you know, it's a kind of, I mean, I can understand the adrenaline. I can understand, you know, the sensation that they're getting out of this.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to get past the fact that it's illegal.
Well, people view it too as a sport, and we've talked about illegal racing before. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bike park isn't a terrible idea if we lean into the sport competitive nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're not just going and, like, just knuckling around. We've got spectators coming because it's time to see, you know, the dirt bike Olympics.
Yeah,
something
see,
like
that's
that.
Cool.
See that.
It's cool, but then you have to start, you know, investing money into things that you wouldn't have to if you're just taking this thing out of a shed and riding it around the block. You know, instead of a gallon of gas that will get you around half the day, you know, yeah. One of these, you have to start, you know, investing in the safety gear that we talked about, or maybe in entry fees for competitions, you know, so that prizes can be given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever that happens to be, there
or
might be some
charity.
Additional. Yeah, if it's for charity, that's, yeah, whatever. I mean, there's some great outlets for this whole thing. I really do believe that this can be turned around into something like 100% positive. But right now, it's still got that stigma that there's something not right about this. And I feel it. You know, when I watch this, I mean, I know it's not right. I mean, you can see the reactions of people around them when it happens. It's a little bit of terror, a little bit of fascination, some awe, I guess. We've got a lot of people in the office here that have come up to me after a weekend and said, hey, you're not going to believe what happened. I took, you know, some cell phone video of what happened this weekend at the gas station I was at. You know? But, you know, it was frustrating also because I had to wait 20 minutes for this whole group to kind of clear out so I could then resume my route. And, you know, that's a little bit frustrating for people, you know, just have to kind of sit there and wait because you're not going to risk getting into that swarm of ATVs and dirt bikes. So, gosh, I don't know. You know, one other quick thing that's really interesting, I think, you guys might have seen this too, that, you know, when some of these videos will go from the dirt bike experience, you know, with the ATVs, down to people that are doing it with BMX bikes, you know, and maybe mountain bikes or whatever on city streets. And then they'll show oftentimes groups of kids that look up to these, you know, young men as being something that, you know, they want to do in the next 4 or 5 years when they're old enough to, you know, get their own bike. So they're out there riding their BMX bikes as children, trying to do some of the same stunts and things. And I know one video that I watched, there was a young kid, he was standing in a group of other kids talking and, you know, they were yelling stuff at the camera, you know, just kind of being kids, having fun. And there's an adult walking by behind them, and I think it was Baltimore, as a matter of fact. I'll tell you why in a second. But the boy was in a sling. He had his arm in a sling, and he said, you know, I crashed my bike into a tree, and, you know, I broke my arm, and I cracked my collarbone, my teeth came out. And like, he was talking about all his injuries that he had, but he's like, I still can't wait to get back on my bike again. And the adult behind them is saying, like, oh, man, you guys think you're in a gang. What do you call your gang anyways? And they're like, we're like the 12 o'clock boys. You know, and that was from Baltimore, right? So they see themselves as being like the 12 o'clock boys in Baltimore, which is like one of these street riding gangs. You know, I keep calling them gangs, but they're groups.
Yeah.
Of ATV riders, et cetera. But these young kids are looking up to them, and there's going to be another generation of these kids that's going to do the same thing. And they're already excited about it. So it's going to happen. You know,
why they're called the 12 o'clock boys?
Why is that?
Because the goal is when you pop a wheelie to be pointing at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Part of the whole thing is showing off and having people see you. These group stage events like they do. They want to be seen. They want to make a show of it. And I feel like this is the best way for them to do it is just to get a big group together.
Yeah.
And go out on 285 or whatever and have people see them there.
You know, there were always people when I was growing up that were like super good at riding wheelies on their 10 speed, you know, the ones with the really thin tires
They'd
ride around, you know, like miles like that, you know, riding their bike. And I was never all that good.
Miles?
Well, okay. Hundreds and hundreds of yards like that. Every time you'd see them going down the road, they're riding a wheelie. Like sometimes no hands or some, you know, show off thing like that. It was like the older kids, right? And I was never that good. So maybe my group could be called like the 8 o'clock boys.
There you go.
You know, like I could get my wheel up to like 8 o'clock for a short time and then put it back down.
Yeah. One thing about the legality that I wanted to say is that there's people in the country that do this as well, like out in the sticks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're not really doing it legally either.
Oh, absolutely.
There's very few places that you can ride an ATV and not have to pay a lot of money or own a lot of land where you can go and just ride and practice and where you could do that legally.
That
so
is a fantastic
I feel
point.
Like it's just kind of that thing. They do it where they live. The
right.
People out in the country, they ride where they live. So it's, you know, it's illegal, but, you know, so is speeding.
Okay,
and everybody speeds.
I
what?
No, yeah, no one in this room, Kurt. I don't know what you're talking about.
Jeez, man.
Yeah, so,
I thought
so
you were being cool.
Earlier you mentioned that you had a four-wheeler or you had access to a four-wheeler.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what was that all about?
Oh, I just growing up in a more rural area for part of the time when we lived there. And I think it's a thing that all kids should have an opportunity to do, you know, a little dirt bike, ATV. I think it's important for us to acclimate to outdoor activities, things like that.
Yeah.
And it's just cool. So we had a stretch of land, just like Kurt was describing. You have to have the land to do it. So we were never on main roads. You know what I mean? As much as I wanted to go to the drugstore because I thought it would be cool, you know what I mean? I was not old enough and I couldn't. I would have lost, you know, I don't know if my parents would have let me get an actual driver's license if I got caught pulling some Grand Theft Auto ATV.
Fair enough.
But this is an experience I think a lot of us listening along today have had as kids. Like, did you guys ever have dirt bikes or ATVs? I know you did, Scott.
Well, that farm that I would spend summers on in Indiana, there was that, you know, that one magical Christmas when my cousin got a four-wheeler.
Wow.
And a three-wheeler, and then a three-wheeler for their youngest kid, you know, like the little tiny mini one.
Oh, they were starting
back in the early days of like the Honda three-wheelers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the big balloon type tires.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, that thing was so cool. They were all fun. They're blast. But I loved the four-wheeler and it was fast and I learned how to shift and all that. And we'd jump it. Okay, you would take it down to the school and jump it, you know. And that's the closest I came to like, you know, riding on the road like Kurt was talking about. Like maybe you're off in the ditch because it's a lot of open country out there in the middle, you know, northern Indiana, I guess. And, you know, we were able to stay off the road, which was rarely traveled. It's an old rural highway that was in front of the farm. And just, it was a blast. It was a lot of fun to do it. And I look back on it with, you know, great fondness. You know, it was a lot of fun to do it. And I wish I had somewhere to do that now and could have one of those vehicles again because it was that much fun. But
you can do it on the street outside.
I see it all the time.
Yeah,
we're talking about them.
I just ride it into work. It'd probably be a faster commute, you know, getting around all the traffic, you know.
Hop on the shoulder, yeah. Don't get caught.
Any experience on anything like this? How about like a mini bike or, you know, like the little, you know, the off-road type bikes or anything like that?
I stick to bikes of the pedal variety, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. I would have pegged you as like a kid that was always on his dirt bike, his BMX.
No, always on my bicycle.
Know? Yeah.
So we also want to hear from you because we know a lot of people in the audience have definitely grown up with ATVs or dirt bikes or mini bikes, which I'm glad you mentioned. You can let us know your story. Tell us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're Car Stuff HSW. Or just Car Stuff, some derivation thereof. Shout out to everybody on Facebook who was saying hello to you, Scott.
Oh, yes. I checked out the comments. I really appreciate that. It's good to be missed.
Yeah.
Right. I'm glad to be back, though, really.
And on a positive note, we did find a successful case of legal bike lifing, right? In Pennsylvania in 2018, someone bought out an entire racetrack and more than 400 dirt bike and ATV riders took advantage of this. This was in Long Pond, Pennsylvania. A dirt bike fan out of Harlem, a guy named Benjamin Charles, rented out the entire racetrack in Long Pond. And apparently they had a hell of a time. And they got written up in the New York Times.
Is Long Pond Pocono Raceway?
You know what, Kurt? I think you're right. I think they actually did rent out Pocono.
No way. Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow. This is much bigger than I thought. I guess I was picturing just more of like a state fairground type situation.
No, I think Kurt's right. I've got a video here.
Nope, that's a paved track. That's big.
Yeah.
That's big, yeah. Yeah, interesting. All right, well, that looks like fun. But you know what? Right away, you just showed me that, and I just saw people going the opposite opposite direction. So they're headed at each other on dirt bikes.
I mean, that's the thing, man.
Is it about motorcycles that just brings out that rebel in people?
I don't know, but it is, isn't it? I mean, it is something about them. Like, it just makes you feel good, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Looks like fun.
So there are individuals and groups out there finding a way to make this work without some of the cons that we mentioned.
Sure. So have the fun without the fear of being arrested.
Yeah, but for some people, the fear is part of the fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. If I had an opportunity to do this, I would have to think twice about it.
I would say, choose your words carefully.
No, I would seriously consider it. I don't think that I would do it because I'm one to try to not get arrested. You know, I don't want to.
Yeah.
I try not to do things that are illegal. I really do try not to.
Your rap sheet's too deep already,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I'm just waiting for that third strike, you know. But no, seriously, I probably would have to seriously consider it because it's kind of one of those events or times in my life when, you know, I physically could do something like that still. It would be a lot of fun, I know, just the adrenaline, you know, that's what everybody's searching for, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, just being part of a group like that, even just if it was one ride, that would be fun.
I don't know what the fine is. I feel like the cops go now, at least in Atlanta, I feel like the cops have been pretty hesitant to crack down on people.
Yeah, but they're crushing bikes.
Yeah, well, that was in D.C., so I can't speak to D.C. But also, I don't know about you guys, but I'm very reluctant to say anything about any personal plans here because I don't know what the fines are. You know, if it's some place where it's like a $72 fine or something, like a seatbelt ticket, then I feel like that's, don't take this out of context, but I feel like that's a fun crime. You know what I mean? Where they're like, oh, you are doing wheelies on a side road. I'll be like, you got me. Scott is writing this down.
What's the date? Okay.
Date.
Fun crime, you said?
Yes.
Got it.
Fun crime.
Got it.
Because I also, if there's a serious thing, like the DC fine includes possibly a month in jail, which I'm sure is probably, you know, a suspended sentence or something you get if you're being a real pill.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't want our show to be played in court with me going, yeah, fun crime. Let's get on our ATVs. What are they going to do? Lock me up. I'm going to live forever. Woo!
Well, just stay out of DC. That's all you have to do. I mean, how many other cities are you banned from? I mean, so, you know, just one more city. One more city just, on the list.
Right.
Okay. Well, Kurt, what's your opinion? Would you do this if given the opportunity?
I'm going to pass. I'll be on my bicycle, though.
Okay. Fair enough. In a critical mass ride somewhere?
Yeah. No, I don't take part in those.
Okay, gotcha.
Usually just solo.
Yeah.
Solo out of the way.
Nothing wrong with that.
I thought of you, Kurt, because I read about a thing in San Francisco, I want to say. It's somewhere in California called Critical Manners. This is a true story.
Critical Manners.
Yeah, right, it's, they're...
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, I think they're trying to bring civility to bikers. Yeah, it's San Francisco. It's a response to critical mass. And... they ride through the city on the second Friday of the month, and they make a big deal of obeying all traffic laws.
Now, this is something I can get behind.
Are you serious?
Yeah, this is great. What a fantastic idea.
So goody-two-shoes.
Yes, perfect.
Where's the
fun? This is perfect, yeah. It's great.
Oh, my gosh. That's
you
like
bikers.
The one thing that I do not do on my bicycle, and I see this all the time, and it bothers me even as a cyclist, is that when you pass a cyclist, and you hit a red light, they pass you back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel as if I don't want to be passed twice by a car. So I'll just, you know, I'll wait my place. Because, you know, that just increases the danger. Yeah, I'm like you, Scott. Straight and narrow.
I try to be. Yeah. I try to be, really.
No speeding.
Okay, well.
Scott, no, I can't believe
no comment.
You want to join a club that's dedicated to following rules.
It's not me. I want other people to join that club to follow the rules.
Okay.
Yeah, I want them to do it and understand the rules of the road, and then everybody's happy, right? We're all happy. I see this San Francisco group as like cotillion for bike riders. You know, it's like, here's the way to behave properly. They don't teach you how to dance and how to dress and how to set a table. They teach you like, hey, when that light's red, you don't go.
I wish we had told you about this earlier because your takes on this are hilarious.
I think all these groups know how to behave on their motorcycles or bicycles or even in their cars.
Yeah,
I think
no
they
one's
just
startled.
Choose not to. Yeah.
No one's like, oh, that's what those lights meant the whole time.
I don't know, Ben. I think they don't know.
Let us know, folks. We have a lot of bikers in the audience. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's the people who went to Cotillion.
Yeah, maybe we've got less bikers in the audience now, if you know what I mean.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah, they've given up on us.
Yeah. Oh, man. But let us know your take, because this is an interesting debate, and it's one that's set to continue. And you can probably tell that the three of us are, you know, we're all a little on the fence. We got some pros and some cons here, you know?
I will tell you this. I'm going to go back to my desk after this, and I'm going to watch more of the videos of these rideouts and, you know, the bike life videos, because they're fascinating. They're fun to watch. They really are, and they look like fun. But just do the same and see what you think, and then write in and tell us.
And I'm going to brush up on my critical manners.
Good for you, Kurt.
So here we are. It's car stuff. We're in 2020. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't be a stranger. We will be back very soon.
2020. I see things so clearly now. You know what I mean?
I can't believe
it's a terrible pun, isn't it? I know. Let's just end it here. It's not worth going any farther.
Car Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.